The U.S. recently reopened its embassy in Havana, but controversy over normalization continues. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. The Tampa Tiger Bay Club recently hosted a debate at the historic Central Asturiano Club in Ybor City. In this program, highlights from that debate between two outspoken rivals, Ralph Fernandez and Al Fox. The debate is moderated by Jeff Patterson of News Channel 8.
It really is an honor for me to be here. But 5 years ago, if you'd have told me I would be moderating a debate on Cuba, I would have wondered why. The last time a Patterson was in Havana, it was in the 1950s, and it was my grandfather who was a minor league baseball umpire, and he umpired winter league baseball in Havana. Since then, there hasn't been really many opportunities for many Americans to go to Cuba. I have friends who, over the last 10 or so years, who have been trying to encourage me to go there. They have licenses. For a variety of reasons, I elected not to go. But then President Obama and Raul Castro made a historic announcement in January, and Channel 8 decided to aggressively follow this story. We have been a number of times. I went in January and spent a week there, and I was, frankly, extremely interested to see what I saw. I have been told a number of things about the way life was in Cuba, the way I would be treated when I was in Cuba, the way the government would treat me when I was in Cuba. And it was very interesting to go down and see for myself the way I was received by just average citizens. I was able to speak with them. I was not interfered with by the government, except on a couple of occasions when they stopped me from filming in locations. But I've experienced very similar things here in the Port of Tampa, where security guards don't want you filming certain things at certain times for certain reasons. So the brushback that I got was in a store. A police officer asked us to stop filming. We did. Same thing happens here in Walmart. So that was an eye-opening experience for me, to go down, to be able to talk to people, to be able to ride in 1950s cars that my grandfather probably rode in. So I am very honored that Tiger Bay Club has chosen me to be here tonight. I know that this club has a reputation for asking feisty questions. I expect that tonight. I expect a spirited discourse between these two very intelligent men. I've known Ralph for more than 20 years, and have recently met Mr. Fox, and I know that he has been to Cuba more than 100 times. So I expect their discourse to be very spirited tonight. Let me talk first about the people that I have on my left and my right. On my left, Albert Fox Jr. He grew up here in Ybor City. He worked as an usher at Tampa Theater. He served as a senior congressional staff assistant in both the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives. He has earned degrees in both political science and psychology from the University of Maryland before becoming a successful lobbyist and a businessman. He has more than 40 years of experience in the federal government and private sector. He has represented several major corporations, including the former Allied Chemical Corporation, where he was recognized as an expert on environmental law and regulation. He formed his own lobbying and government relations company in 1984, and in 1998, he established a nonprofit Alliance for Responsible Cuba Policy Foundation to establish trade and diplomatic relations between the United States and Cuba. And through that work, he has made more than 100 legal visits to Cuba. Mr. Fox then took then Tampa Mayor Dick Greco in 2002 for a visit that included a meeting with Fidel Castro, which was somewhat controversial, as you may recall. He returned to Tampa in 2005 to run for the United States congressional seat vacated by then Congressman Jim Davis, and he was only one among the five candidates to call for rapprochement with Cuba. Today, the four other candidates, including U.S. Representative Kathy Castor, have changed their positions to reflect what his was at that time. Through his extensive travels to Cuba and connections and relations that he has established over many years of taking numerous delegations to Cuba, Mr. Fox has become one of the leading international authorities and go-to experts on Cuba. Now, to my right, Ralph Fernandez. Mr. Fernandez is a Tampa criminal defense and litigation attorney who has, for over three decades, been the loudest hardliner on the Cuban regime in Tampa and a tireless legal defender of men accused of trying to bring down the Castro regime, as well as a passionate anti-war Democrat. Fernandez's zealous anti-Fidel Castro passions have long made him controversial. Born in Cuba, he moved with his family to Tampa as an 8-year-old in 1961. He was working as a prosecutor for Hillsborough County in 1980 when the trajectory of his life and career turned dramatically. That was the year that Castro proclaimed that any Cuban who was wishing to emigrate to the United States could board a boat at the Port of Mariel. And during the ensuing months, 125,000 Cubans fled to the Sunshine State, and approximately 1,700 exiles were imprisoned in Florida jails because of criminal records and other mental problems. That's when Mr. Fernandez got busy and began defending many of those Cuban exiles. But Mr. Fernandez remained steadfast in his opposition to opening trade and travel with Cuba and ending the decades-long U.S. embargo against Cuba. When asked by Mitch Perry in a 2012 article for Creative Loafing if he, Mr. Fernandez, is willing to say the U.S.-led embargo has been worth it after 50-plus years, he brings up the war on cancer. If it hasn't been won yet, does that mean it's no longer worthy? The logic is, if you fight for something long enough and if it doesn't work, then you should surrender. And I don't believe in that. What I believe is what's right, and if no one believes it, Mr. Fernandez said, is also one of the leading international experts and longtime leader in the Cuban exile community in the fight against the communist leadership of our closest island neighbor to the south. All right. So our format calls for opening statements. And since we did have a coin toss at the beginning, Mr. Fernandez has elected to go second. So, Mr. Fox, you have an opening statement of 3 minutes, sir.
I was not at the coin toss. I hope there are not more surprises to come. I'm here this evening for a couple of reasons. Number one, I don't know if you all know Paul Guzzo with the Tampa Tribune, but I hope that, Paul, we can get a smile out of you tonight. And the second reason I came here was that I was born literally four blocks from here. And I used to shine shoes under the steps here at the Centro when I was 10 years old. Dickie Menendez and I decided to make a little shoe shine box and come over and make a little bit of money, and he went under the steps on Palm, and I went under the steps on Nebraska. And after an hour, I walked over to him. I said, "How's business?" He said, "Great." He went, "Really?" I said, "Well, I haven't shined any shoes." Someone was sitting in his little stool there. I went back to my place. An hour later, I came back. I said, "How's business?" "Great." What I did not realize that Dickie knew that the men come into the cantina through the Palm Avenue exit, not the Nebraska Avenue exit. And the other thing I want you all to know is this. Don't you all have anything better to do than to come and listen to two windbags? But I want to just read you a letter that I wrote to Ralph in 2002. I'd never met Ralph before. At that time, I was in Washington, D.C. I came down, and we had a meeting that some mutual friends, a very dear friend of mine, and unbeknownst to me, became a very dear friend of Ralph. I knew this man in the fourth grade, Larry Scott. And in the 41 years where I was gone, he became good friends with Ralph. I questioned his judgment a little bit, but turned out to be okay, I guess. And Ralph, you remember Larry and the work that you did to help him. So I sent this letter to Ralph October the 31st. "Dear Ralph," and I'm not going to read you the whole, it's a 7-page letter, but I want to read it to the first paragraph and the ending paragraph to hopefully set the tone for this evening. "Dear Ralph, I found our 4.5-hour meeting last Monday evening in your office informative, interesting, and respectful, and I thank you for that. We discuss many topics regarding United States-Cuba relations, and while there appears to be an agreement in some areas, there is clearly a fundamental philosophical difference that exists between us regarding United States-Cuba relations. Accordingly, it is important that I comment on your October 23rd letter to various city council members in Tampa, including Councilwoman Mary Alvarez, in which you discuss Mayor Greco's trip to Cuba and reference me on several occasions in not a flattering light. As you know, a mutual friend of ours shared the content of the letter with me. And then there's a lot of other very important media information. But this is how I concluded it. Finally, allow me the liberty to give you some advice. You should find a way to stop continually criticizing Mayor Greco for his trip to Cuba. For it appears to many you are solely driven by pride and vengeance. For the little that I know of you, you're a better person than that. You can achieve this without compromising the position in which you so passionately believe in. In closing, I wish to share a personal comment. While I strongly disagree with your approach to enhancing United States-Cuba relations, and believe you are hurting the very people you so truly desire to help. For it is not your veracity that I question. It is your judgment that I question. I thank you again for taking the time to visit with me and invite you to travel with me on my next visit to Cuba. I do not ask you to take my point of view. I ask you to go to Cuba yourself and reach your own conclusion. Thank you.
I think that's 4 minutes to you, Mr. Fernandez.
I want to thank Vic DiMaio. I want to thank everybody here, everybody on Tiger Bay. It's a wonderful organization, very well respected, and truly you do a magnificent job. I just came in from New York visiting grandchildren, and as I arrived, I was handed a newspaper today, the Tampa Tribune, and it was a great picture of me, I don't know from where, and one of Albert's, I guess, from when he was in high school. My photograph looked like I was David Letterman in Central Park on a windy day, but I should not have complained as I drove home, because this is what the Tribune has in terms of Albert and I and the debate, Tampa men on opposite sides of the Cuba question to debate in Ybor. As you can see, Albert is there, but I guess I'm this guy right here. That somehow may reflect some of the sentiment, and I know that Paul Guzzo asked me if I welcome adversity, and I do, I thrive on it, but I didn't expect that to begin with that photograph. In any event, I didn't want to leave Albert's comments in passing like that, because they're very genteel and very pleasant, and that's how our relationship indeed started. But what happened after that is that it evolved into two bar grievances in which he suggested, as a result of the fact that I said he was a Cuban agent of influence and responded to other activities that he was engaged in America, as we have every right to do, he wrote the Florida Bar, and I have those various complaints here with appended exhibits from a variety of individuals in this community that claimed I had said a number of things about him, but he wanted me disbarred. He did it twice, and threaten a number of lawsuits. The reason for that is because I, and Albert knows, was engaged with U.S. intelligence since 1988. So while I had this practice pro bono representing Cuban freedom fighters and defectors, at the same time, I worked for U.S. intelligence. Because, you see, as a Cuban, being born in Cuba, if you're not a good Cuban, you can't be a good American. At the same time, in order to be a good American, if you were born elsewhere, you owe this nation a tremendous debt of gratitude that you can never repay, no matter how much you do for it. And that's what this is about. You see, today we're going to talk about Cuba, but this goes farther. We're really dwelling on national security, foreign policy, and a very difficult blend between the past and the future, because we're looking through a kaleidoscope of how we're going to handle and confront similar situations as the Cuba scenario in the future. Now we're dealing with the past, Iran, North Korea. We're dealing with Cuba. But in the future, we're going to have to deal with a rising Libya problem. What's happening in Egypt, ISIL, and Venezuela, just south of us, where Leopoldo Lopez was just given 13 years because he spoke freely against the Maduro regime, which is in place because of Fidel Castro. Now, people ask me, all the time about this division in Tampa, the Cuban scenario. On the one hand, you have individuals who promote the embargo, travel restrictions, and the abrogation of them, and who want to do business with Cuba. Many good-natured fellows. I know many a time I've called them carpetbaggers. I've called them a lot worse at times. Mostly true. On the other hand, you have staunch resistance from people who suffered the indignities and brutality of the regime and who clearly have not forgotten what they endured. I'm going to tell you something. I had an epiphany of sorts just weeks ago when Pope Francis, I guess, shook the world by the beautiful things that he said. And I can't help but think of one of the most critical statements. He said, "We must not be taken aback when referring to the immigration crisis in Europe as a result of the Syrian refugee crisis." He said, "But rather view them as persons, seeing their faces and listening to their stories." Well, that's what I can't do, and I can't forget every morning, because I remember the faces. I remember the faces of the 30,000 people that were executed by the regime, separated from their families. I remember the pain of nearly 300,000 political prisoners. I remember Roberto Pisano, who's sitting there, who took a bullet in the head in combat, served 18 years. Three times he was taken before a firing squad. The first time he fell to the ground when he was not shot, and the other 11 were. That's what I remember each and every morning. We must not surrender our core principles, even though we can always remain open to progress and to changing facts.
All right. Thank you.
Coming up,
if we do lift the embargo, what should the United States get in return? Should we be able to release political prisoners? Should we be able to get something that the United States would like?
We'll hear more of the debate between Ralph Fernandez and Al Fox. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters. I'm Carson Cooper. This is Florida Matters, with highlights of a recent Tampa Tiger Bay Club debate on normalizing relations with Cuba.
I get to ask the first question, and I knew that this was going to be tough because both of these men could not be further apart on this issue. I asked, actually, to sit in the middle tonight, not to separate them from fisticuffs, but I knew that they were going to have differing opinions. So you have 2 minutes for the response to these questions, but let me ask this, because in no legal agreement, in no business deal, in no divorce, does anyone get what they want. There's always a compromise position. So what's your compromise position? And Mr. Fernandez, if we do lift the embargo, what should the United States get in return? Should we be able to release political prisoners? Should we be able to get something that the United States or Mr. Fernandez would like? And Mr. Fernandez, for you, if the embargo is lifted, what would allow us to do that? What would you be willing to say could happen for this to occur? Would all of the property have to be compensated? Would the communists have to leave the island? What's your compromise position? And I believe that we are going to start with Mr. Fox. 2 minutes.
Well, boy, I can't give you 17 years in 2 minutes, but I'm sorry, but I do want to comment on what Ralph said about, he's absolutely right, I did write the Florida Bar Association, but that was after, it's a chicken and the egg, after Ralph repeatedly had reported me to the FBI referred to me in the newspapers as a carpetbagger. So I wrote the Florida Bar and I said, under their canon of ethics, an attorney should not be saying those kinds of things that are groundless. So I want to clarify that. Secondly, I want to make a point on the gentleman that you mentioned that spent 17 years in a prison in Cuba. You're absolutely right about that. But that gentleman was a soldier in the Batista Army. Whether he deserved to spend that time in prison or not is a whole other story, and I don't do it, and I respect him, and I admire him for some of the things he's been saying lately, recently. But you have to put this in context. In Cuba, there was a revolution. One side won, the other side lost. Whether the good guys won or the bad guys lost is irrelevant to the story. In every revolution in the history of Latin and Central America, beginning with Simon Bolivar, whoever you want, one side wins and the other side loses. And you can't paint a picture that say that some of these people were beaten and tortured. They were on the other side at the time. And I don't agree with it. I mean, I'm not for one single minute suggesting to anyone here that the Castro government has not put people in prison. On the other hand,
but if we can, because with 27 seconds okay. left in a somewhat complicated question, right. Let's jump on that.
Well, the answer to the question is, it is now the official position of the United States to have diplomatic relations with Cuba. Our flag has been raised. I feel that the point of view that I've been espousing for all of these years has won. And the genie's out of the bottle, and there's no turning back now.
Mr. Fernandez.
To answer the questions and not follow what Donald Trump does in the recent debates and many of the other candidates, number one, you shut the doors to Cuba. When the president, whom I fundraised for, whom I was a poll watcher with my wife for, whom I have a picture still in my office and have to explain it to every one of the political prisoners, who incidentally, Mr. Fox, there were 283 people in the Batista army, which he was one. This happened long after when he joined 1,831 who had fought alongside him, including one of his commanders, the blackest man I have ever seen or met, Eusebio Peñalver, that did 30 years in his prisons. Most of the people he imprisoned were his very own. But here's what happens. You shut the doors to Cuba. Because what's happened in Cuba is that there has always been an escape valve. Right now, it is inconceivable, either Republican or Democratic concerns related to the immigration crisis, how come we have at this day and age a wet foot, dry foot policy, and the Cubans that arrive now get to violate every restriction and rule related to admittance to the United States? Everybody's worried about illegal immigration, and yet what we have is a constant flow of people that come. If you shut the door, then they have a problem to deal with, much like Eastern Europeans did and had, and that's why you remember the Berlin Wall. Also, you don't make concessions. Anyone here a banker, I presume there are some. Why in the world? And I don't have a general objection to the abrogation of the embargo. But what I don't want to do is create a provision or a waiver that allows Cuba to borrow money. And the reason for that is, if I was buying a house down the street in Cobra Thales and I went to a bank and asked for $4 million to buy it, and I told the banker, listen, in the last 60 years, I haven't paid a single debt back. It's been cut down to 10% in most cases, and I haven't paid those. Do I have a loan? Probably the door would slap me in the rear on the way out. I just don't want Cuba to be lent money so carpetbaggers make the profit off the top, and some poor guy in Wisconsin, in Seattle, somewhere else in the country, 7 years from now has to pay more taxes to pay back that debt.
All right. I don't see in here that the format calls for rebuttal. I didn't hear actually an answer to my question from either man. So, Paul, with that, we're going to give it to you, and hopefully you'll get better luck on getting an answer to your question.
All right. Well, the Roswell Park Cancer Institute has recently said that a lung cancer vaccine, a drug that they've gotten from Cuba, they believe could be the first step to a vaccine to prevent lung cancer. The Tampa Aquarium believe that the access they're getting to Cuba's coral reefs could help restore our own decaying coral reefs in the U.S. Our earthquake scientists believe that now that they have access to Cuban waters, they can better predict where earthquakes may occur in the Caribbean. All this is due to President Obama allowing our government and our citizens more access to Cuba. But these are all through executive orders. The next president could reverse them. Do you believe that whoever the next president is will reverse them and completely block Cuba again, or are we too far along? Or seeing that there are some benefits that our scientists, doctors believe we can get from Cuba, do you think that whoever the president is will leave open for those working relationships to continue?
Mr. Fox.
I can tell you without question the next president, regardless of who it is, will not rescind those executive orders, without any question about that.
Mr. Fernandez.
It would be foolish, much as the people who claim that evolution is inconsistent with religious principles and a deity that governs us all, or that climate change since 1972 has not dramatically changed because of man, for me to suggest and sit in front of you that anything that would benefit the health of anyone in this planet, I would oppose. There's a lot of good. I would not oppose any of what Paul has just stated. I would support that kind of exchange with Cuba. We also cannot forget where we stand in this earth at this point in time, and we have to adapt to changing facts. Many of the people that I treasure, value, admire, and hope to be with till the end are people who have a concern, however, not for the product that can be generated out of Cuba, but for the people of Cuba and the quest for democracy in Cuba so that they can join the rest of civilization. You know, the embargo, everybody talks about the embargo, and this is part of what we're discussing here. No one really, if I asked any of you, and it's maybe tough to ask at this point in time, but really is going to be able to tell me the transition that began with the CACR, the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, the 31 CFR, Code of Federal Regulations Provisions, the Foreign Assistance, Helms-Burton, the Cuba Democracy Act. There are 8 statutes that govern this with this much paper associated with them. And the people on my side say, it hasn't worked, Cuba has everything. And the people on the other side said, abrogate it. All I'm saying is this, I could care less if they abrogate the embargo so that that can happen. What I'm saying is, don't lend them money. Raise the fence in Cuba so that just like in Eastern Europe, just like in East Germany, just like in Hungary, Poland, that those people can be free from within. It is a calculated escape valve, and that's why Cuba remains a regime to this day.
I think this is an issue that we are going to be talking about a lot. I think the focus of the discussion has changed a great deal, certainly in the last few months. But I think it's a discussion that needs to go on, and we need to have intelligent people like sitting on my left and right to talk about these things and to take us through this. So I want to say thank you very much to both of you.
And that's it for today's show. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts. Audio for today's show recorded by Steve Newborn. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.